Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hello, Egg Chasers. It's the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that doesn't take itself or the game too seriously. Back for a second episode of the week, this one looking at the Clash of the Codes matchup between Bath and Wigan back in the 1990s. In fact, what year was it, Phil?
96.
So had rugby just gone professional at this point?
Yeah, this is the end of the 95-96 season, which I think was the first one of them being formally professional.
I guess thanks Sky Sports for replaying both of these games back-to-back on Friday night. The Rugby League matchup at Main Road and then the Rugby Union matchup at Twickenham straight afterwards. How do you enjoy it, JB?
It was weird. The whole thing was weird. I didn't expect to react to it the way that I did. I can't really attribute to why it happened, but I just found myself really supporting Wigan. I don't know what it was about the Wigan team, but they just seemed so much more noble and worthy than the Bath team. And also, even though I'm not from the north as such, I'm Welsh, North Wales, I'm going to just be bursting with pride for this northern team. It's from a small town. Wigan's a really, really small town. And this was not simply just a good rugby league team. It wasn't just a great rugby league team or a great rugby team. I think it's probably one of the great sports teams that the British Isles has ever produced. It was amazing.
I think you're probably right. And we spoke in detail last week about the names who were incredibly famous at the time and who are still famous in rugby circles. The like of Jason Robinson, Twig O'Mara, Martin O'Fire, Henry Paul, Sean Edwards, Andy Farrell. They are like rugby legends across both codes
Yeah, I was going to say rugby union legends.
Yeah. They are like all-time rugby greats, both in terms of their on-field across both codes and certainly in some cases, their off-field, their coaching.
The impact of the Wigan Rugby League team was more significant in rugby union than the Bath team.
Oh, 100%.
Yes.
100%. It doesn't even come close. It made me feel a bit sad as well because, you know, these teams, I don't know why, I'm sort of making a link, I guess, between how shoddy, I've got to pick my words carefully now, but how shoddy these northern towns are now and sort of like how, I'm not deprived, but you know, the sort of, you know, the post-industrial north, but what pride that they had in these incredible sports teams. And they were incredible sports teams. And now they just don't exist. I mean, Super League does exist, and I still like to watch it occasionally, but nothing to what it used to be.
Yeah, definitely nothing. And probably one of the things to touch on is the difference in class between the two teams. And there's probably a few things. So you've got an all-time great Wigan team against a good Bath team, a Bath team that was good enough to win the league.
Including
that season. But that Wigan team was exceptional. But there was a bigger gulf in class than that. And I would put it down to the professionalism. Well, it's very easy to put it down to the professionalism aspect. Because particularly in that first game, when that Wigan backline, and it's not just the backline because the forwards were skilled ball players and picked good angles as well. When that Wigan team were running angles, offloading, passing, picking lines, it was like the Bath defence had never seen anything like it.
They probably hadn't.
It was like totally alien. But that that Wigan team, like, we watch it now and it almost seems amateurish compared to what we're used to.
Yeah.
But it was so far ahead of the curve in rugby union at that point in time that it was just, it was miles ahead.
So it's interesting you say that, because when you watch rugby league now, the way that the patterns of running and the way that they do things is so precise. I mean, it's really quite incredible to watch. And I kind of assumed that had been developed for the last 20, 30, 40 years. So the rules in league have been broadly consistent for 50 odd years. Whereas the rules in union, I mean, it's completely unrecognizable. I was surprised how unevolved the game was, actually. But then I thought maybe they didn't need to be that evolved because they were playing Bath.
Yeah, and they were so much better.
Yeah, I don't think, and that's one of the disappointments of the entire game, which is I don't think that, in fact, both games, I don't think Wigan particularly played even close to what they could do.
Probably not.
I totally agree with what you say, Phil. The conditioning of rugby league players at that point in time was light years ahead of rugby union, and I think if you had a similar match now, I think it would be, albeit the nuances of rugby league would mean that the rugby league team would win probably pretty handily as well against the rugby union team trying to play rugby league. But I actually think it would be the reverse. Rugby union's had time now and actually has got the pick of the players because it picks from a bigger pool. It's got the bigger resources, so it attracts more of the players. We've seen that with George Ford and Owen Farrell, for example. And the moment that I knew what I was going to be in for, and I vaguely remember the games. I don't think I watched them, but I was aware of them and might have seen highlights on Rugby Special on BBC Two on the Sunday night or whatever. But the moment I got it for me was when they walked out of the tunnel at Main Road and I looked at the lock. I can't remember who his name was. It might have been Martin Haag or one of them, anyway.
Martin Haag was playing.
And he's a big old guy, Martin Haag, but he hardly had any quads. Hardly any definition on his quads. And I thought, my God, rugby players have changed so much.
Yeah, massively.
And like in the rugby union, in the reverse fixture, the rugby union fixture, it came up with the pack weights at one point, and the Bath pack was lighter than the Wigan pack.
It was 10 stone lighter.
Yeah, 10 stone lighter. And it was 126 stone, the Bath pack, which is 15 and two thirds stone. So like 15-8, basically 15-8, 15-9. Average with players like Victor Abogu and Nigel Redmond and Martin Haag and Steve Ajomo.
Ajomo was a handy player, wasn't he?
So I don't know, right? So I always think about size of players and whatnot. I think, would I be big enough to play a higher level of rugby 20 years ago than what? So I'm 6'2, right? Would I be big enough to play a high level of rugby back in the day rather than now? Because undoubtedly everyone is bigger now. And I think, yeah, probably. Physically, that stacks up. But even though this Bath team were pretty rubbish compared to the Wigan team, they're all still pretty hard. And the game itself is far more dirty and far more cheap shots.
Oh, yeah.
And I think a lot of modern players now, particularly in the amateur era, would really struggle to play that because it's so chippy.
Yeah. There'll be all sorts of unseen stuff going on at scrum time, at ruck time, everywhere.
And the props, once they started screwing the Wigan guys, they didn't stop. They actually didn't. You couldn't even do that in like level 8.
In the union game, I'd probably say if scrums had gone uncontested, if Wigan had dropped...
They did in the second half, didn't they?
Did they?
Very late on, because there were still like pushover tries basically in the first 20 minutes of that second half.
They were letting them have the lineouts and stuff, weren't they?
Yeah, lineouts got a bit easier, but the scrums, I think Wigan probably could have won that had they.
Wigan at the breakdown were hilarious.
So that first, obviously, Bath took an absolute hiding in the first game, and it was not even funny. It was not even close. It was men against boys.
It wasn't even entertaining. Neither game was entertaining. They were both terrible spectacles.
But that's the start of that second game. The rucking was absolutely ridiculous because basically the whole Bath pack were fired up and wanted to rectify the embarrassment. So eight men flew over the ball for every single one of like the first 10 rucks. It was eight men, the whole pack over the ball. And the first few scrums as well were pretty brutal.
But you gotta think, like, if we're going to come, and I don't think we're going to take in this game particularly seriously, because have two players come up with retirement to play in Joe Lydon and someone else. I can't remember the other guy.
Graham West, who was the coach at the time, he's 43, the Kiwi coach.
Yeah. You know, don't tell me they're taking it that seriously. But if they really were taking it seriously, they would have known, just weathered the storm. In fact, don't even contest the rucks.
Well, I think the weekend prior, so Wigan beat Bath in rugby league at Main Road, and then the following weekend they won the Middlesex Sevens, which I think highlights the point you're talking about, Phil, which is that their athleticism and the physical specimens that they were such that they could just go, oh, we'll have a go at sevens and win it.
Yeah, yeah.
15s when you bring in the lineouts and the scrums, and the rucks. It's a.
I think Bradford had won the Middlesex sevens as well.
Bradford Bulls. Yeah, I think you're right.
And they've got a bloody brilliant sevens team with. I mean, depending on which team that they showed up with, but I'm sure they had one of the Paul brothers. They had Van Nicolo. They had Harpy. They had Paul.
Did they have a Tomkin?
Paul Deacon.
Paul Deacon, yeah.
Deacon, yeah.
Deeks, the best kicker in either codes by percentage.
Is that true?
It is absolutely true.
Before we get any further into the weeds on the game, what about the fireworks before the game in the first match? Yeah. It was like Beirut in 1990.
And little Chinese firecrackers. And you can't see anything. It's weird.
So
I like the idea.
I did notice that this game at Main Road predated the enormous Sky mechanical arm that was installed in all rugby league grounds.
Yeah. Do you know what I was amazed at? Like, genuinely amazed at? Sky managed to get Nicola Sturgeon to do the do the hot sound trap. I mean, that's really mixing politics and culture and sport. That is incredible.
Just to explain, because for anyone who didn't watch it... all I remember is seeing Eddie and Steve-O with Stuart Barnes. I don't know what you're talking about.
That Stuart Barnes makes a lot more sense because I did not like Nicola Sturgeon's know-it-all condescending attitude, I must say.
So that was very good. Now, in terms of commentators, right, I think there are many commentators better than Eddie and Steve-O. Many, many commentators.
They're brilliant though, aren't they?
I don't think there is a pair that are better though. I don't think as a duo but there's any two voices which combine in the same way that these two do. I think they are the best of the best when it comes to setting the stage. It doesn't matter what the game was, right? We could have been watching two of the worst teams in Super League put out B teams and it would still be the greatest game the world has ever seen. They love Super League so much. They love Rugby League so much and it's infectious. And there's lots we learn.
And also...
Oh, Cobb, you was playing! Yes, of course it was!
The music. The dance music. They played it on the telly after every try as well. Every try, they'd fire up the dance music.
Do they still have that music? I think they do, you know.
I think they do. I think it might be the same.
They've had two tunes. They've had that, and they've had another one. But they should never change it.
No.
I've just realised that wasn't connected to the speakers, so for the benefit of anyone who didn't hear that.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's glorious stuff. It really is.
It is great stuff. But the fact they played, I can't remember the song they were playing at the very start. It was something so cheesy, and I loved how brilliantly cheesy it was. Straight after the final whistle, the song that Wigan played immediately after the final whistle when they won was Tina Turner's Simply the Best. I just loved how naff it was.
I think that wasn't that song like synonymous with Wigan for that team for a period.
I think you're right, actually, yeah. I think you're right.
They won everything in the game many times.
Yeah, it's easy to see, isn't it, how Wigan was such a big name in sport. That little Sean Edwards ended up marrying Heather Small. from MP.
Yes. Yeah. But I'll tell you what I noticed in the, which the rugby league influence that it had on rugby union, not just in the players on show with Jason Robinson, Sean Edwards, and who else?
Henry Paul.
Henry Paul, Farrell, that's the other one.
Tugamala.
Yeah.
Tugamala. Tugamala.
Yes. Yeah, Scott Quinnell.
Returning back to rugby union soon after that little jaunt with Wigan. Yeah. He went to Richmond.
Richmond, yeah.
But no, the influence of rugby union on the field as well, tactically, you could see in this game the fact that when Bath were attacking in rugby league, they barely got past the gain line because those two words, line speed.
Line speed. Yeah.
Wigan had that fitness conditioning and they were just out of the traps and on them.
Yeah.
Smashing them. And the number of times Bath were trying to make tackles, and you can see they're just not strong enough because they were just getting shrugged off.
But the other thing that compounded that issue, and it's the line speed again, but when Wigan were defending, their line was uniform. It was coming up fast as a single line. Whereas the Bath team, when their conditioning dropped and they were fatigued, they were just dog legs everywhere, which made there's just so much room for Wigan to break the line.
Yeah. I've forgotten what I was going to say, though. Sorry, that was really, really
it's
interesting
quite right.
as well.
I'll ask a question. Which player that didn't move over to rugby union, Andy Farrell, did you mention Andy Farrell when we did that little list then? I think you might have done. Anyway, which player that didn't move over to rugby league that you saw in this rugby, this Wigan team, would you think would have had the best impact on rugby union if they'd come over?
Did Sean Edwards never play, did he?
No, he didn't.
Because Sean Edwards was a hell of a player. His range of passing and his ability to pick a pass, it was shown many, many times in this game, but he was a superb, superb player. And this period of rugby league was when I was a rugby league fan. At this time, I had the Salford Reds season ticket. So I watched this team, Wigan team, live probably many times. But yeah, Sean Edwards could have been, had he converted at the right time, he could have been a very, very handy, probably fly half or 12. He actually probably could have done the same role that his almost opposite number, Mike Catt, did in rugby union.
Yeah. So I'm asking the question a different way, okay? If you were to reconstitute a Wigan side now, and you don't know, what are they? Five rugby union greats in their rugby league side? Which five would you take now from the Premiership to put into a rugby league side? Who makes the most sense?
That's a good question.
Well, George Ford straight away.
Yeah, George Ford.
Yeah, so George Ford is going to do either the Henry Paul or Sean Edwards role.
Yeah.
So Tuilagi can definitely do the Tuigamala rule.
Yep. He'd be mega.
Joe Thockenasinghe out of the Premiership might be quite handy.
Yeah, it's going to have to be someone a little bit more left, like a Zach Mercer or
someone to do the Andy Farrell rule, which is, so he was a big, strong runner, but he was skillful as well.
Tell you what, Sam Simmons wouldn't be half bad at this.
Yeah, Simmons or Ben Earl. Either one of those two would be very handy.
Oh, I like that.
And then just a brutish ball carrier.
No, Jack Willis.
Jack Willis. Yeah.
He might be an Andy Farrell because he's... I don't know. No, because his breakdown skills are one of his best things. You wouldn't get to do that.
But Andy Farrell could fling around a ball.
Yeah, he could. His distribution was really good.
Yeah, and like Andy Farrell, he was more when he moved to rugby union, he was most at home at 12. So
allegedly, Dan Scarborough used to complain that his hands used to hurt after standing next to Andy Farrell in passing drills.
Maybe maybe Mark Atkinson would be a loose forward.
Yeah.
Mm. He's big. Van Rensburg. There you go.
Yeah. I think that's a good question.
A big back with great hands. Harry Malinder.
Malinder, yeah. Maybe not.
Maybe he wouldn't like to make that many tackles.
Yeah, maybe not as good in contact. Did you notice where Andy Farrell played in the Union game?
Second row, wasn't he?
He was, yeah.
Was he really?
Because Scott Quinnell played eight, kind of obviously. Actually, that's a good point. They showed the Scott Quinnell weight at that time. He must have been the heaviest player on the park.
Oh, he must have been.
He was 120 kgs, which for a back row now is big.
Yeah, and also you've got to also think that Bath were a little bit lucky, because wasn't Dai Young there until very, very recently before that game?
He did, yeah. He played for Wigan, didn't he?
He did play for Wigan.
Dai Young played for Wigan. I didn't know this. No, I didn't know.
Did he play for Salford at one point?
I think. I would say Wigan. It definitely seems like Wigan's in my mind, but maybe he didn't. Maybe played. But he definitely played rugby league.
No, it was. So it was Leeds and Salford.
Was it?
So I do remember this. I remember. There was another, I have no idea who the other prop was. God, this is taking me back a few years. But in the early 90s, when I was a Salford Red season ticket holder, they had two Welsh props, one of whom was Dai Young and one of whom was someone else. But they used to occasionally compete at scrum time.
Nice.
So rugby league scrums, certainly at that stage, I don't even know what the laws are now, but it was like notionally, there was an unwritten rule that you wouldn't contest it. But occasionally Salford with these two Welsh props would contest it and just blow past them totally.
About 7 years ago, I watched Wakefield contest a scrum and win it against the Head.
Yeah.
So it can occasionally happen. Have I told you my Salford City Red story?
Which one? We talk about the Willows probably far too often.
So it must have been about a decade ago now. But a good friend of mine, dear friend of yours, everyone knows him, a guy called Perda Jones.
There's a good Welsh prop.
Yeah, there is a great Welsh prop. He bought me a ticket to watch Wales versus Scotland in Edinburgh, I think. Something like that. Doesn't really matter. And that was he just bought it. And then, oh, that's very kind, Ped. So how can I repay you? He's like, oh, you know, just sorting out later on. Fairly open then. A fairly open-ended affair. So I thought, I know, we've been to watch Salford City Reds quite a lot at the Willows. I'll treat him to a Salford City Red stop. So I went on the online ordering thing, ordered a red one for myself, a white away one for Pedder. 2 weeks later, nothing from Salford. So I called them up, and someone picked up the phone. I went, hi, I've ordered one red top and one white top online. They went, oh, Mr. Beardmore.
It's good such a rugby league. Events. Well, rugby league in general. Like I was looking this week at some of the rugby league organisational photos and the press photos of Tony Adams being... Oh. Signed in as the RFL president are just, they are unbelievable. So
it was like a sitcom. It was like a sitcom had arranged that shot for a scene.
Yeah. There's multiple
Larry
shots.
David wrote the scene.
There's multiple shots. There's the one of, Andy Burnham, who was the previous RFL president.
Was he really? Andy Burnham was RFL president.
Andy Burnham, Tony Adams, and the next one is, which takes, I think she takes over next year, is going to be Claire Balding.
What have these people got?
There's real pedigree in this role. But
will Claire Balding's photo be in front of a vending machine? I hope so.
That photo in front of the vending machine is one of the all-time great sport photos.
With the mayoral chains.
Yeah, the two of them have got their gold chains. They're on like... car boot sale tables with vending machines and a folded up ping pong table behind them, and then there's the Michael Jordan quote behind. I think I might I'll post it on our Twitter this week. It's unbelievable.
Unbelievable is exactly the right word. Unbelievable.
It's perfect.
It is perfect.
Just there's nothing you could tweak. It's the vacant look. I remember the guy, the vacant look on one of the guy's face, just staring into the 1,000-yard stare. One guy got like a shirt untucked or something.
Yeah.
Something like that.
Short sleeve shirt. Of course.
With a pocket.
Perfect.
Love it.
I mean, they are custodians of one of the world's great games
It's just sad seeing what it has become.
I want to see that picture again.
Yeah, I will tweet it. I'll tweet it on Tuesday or Wednesday. I'll tweet it when this pod goes out. On the game, so one of the things that struck me when I was, is actually toward the end of the second game. I've played with and against a few players who played in this, which is quite cool.
Oh, let me guess. Was it?
Any guesses? Yeah.
Sorry, I'm actually just purely. We'll move on to this. I'm just going to share the screen. There you go.
Oh, that's the
amazing,
one.
Isn't it?
That's the one.
The guy with his
two pockets.
There's a guy. There's a guy with the short sleeve shirt, and he's got trainers on.
Yeah.
The guy with his tongue out, and the top button undone. Tony Adams, you can see the look. He's thinking, what the hell have I got myself into? The phones on the table are all Nokia 3210s.
Those are not phones, Tim. Those are dictaphones.
Oh, they're dictaphones, are they? Okay.
Presser about.
I failed time and again. That is why I succeed.
Michael Jordan, what a
They've
quote.
They've got four people being interviewed by six journalists, from what I can tell by the phones.
Oh, my word. That picture is perfect. Yeah, that will go back. That will go up again.
Yeah.
So good.
It's unbelievable, that picture.
Brilliant.
Yeah. Any guesses as to who I played with and against? There's one guy I played with and two guys I played against.
I would have guessed you played against Jason Robinson when he was at Fylde.
No, because Fylde were the league below Sedgley for the period that
Jason Robinson wasn't good in a good enough team to play you.
Although I was at Fylde playing second team rugby when he was at home and he looked magnificent.
He only played at home. He never played away games.
Do you want to know the story behind that? Allegedly,
go on.
There's two versions of this story. Story version number one is he had lots of family commitments and didn't want to play away games. That was version number one. That was the official version. The unofficial version of it was Fylde didn't want him to play away games because they didn't want to put money behind the bar of opposition clubs when he came because he was such a draw. But when he first played, it was like 3,000 people showed up to Fylde to watch.
Yeah, I think he was a massive, massive draw.
Yeah, it's huge. And he looked amazing. And they also had another player on the wing, Ollie.
So it's Ollie Brennan.
Ollie Brennan.
Nick Royal were there.
Nick Royal,
wingers for a long time. I think Nick Royal's still playing.
I played against both of those boys. Nick Royal went to Fylde. No, he didn't. Vale Loon.
He went to Vale Loon for a bit. He went to Caldy on at least one occasion.
Ollie Brennan ran through our whole team from his own try line twice. And then I came off the bench. My first ever game at flanker. Yeah, I used to play wing. First ever game at flanker. Absolutely nailed him. Dead. Surprised he ever played again. I mean, in front of Bill Beaumont, no less.
My favourite hit of you, JB, that I've ever seen was when we're in New York, or New Jersey specifically, playing for the Bayonne Bombers. And you absolutely destroyed some young kid who's never played the game before. He's about eight stone. Wham!
So I'm gonna guess, Phil, that it would be someone. Was it someone you played at through like schools or Colts rugby or something like that?
No, because they're all
much older.
Much older, yeah. I mean, I was it's probably around my 10th birthday. Oh, sorry, 11th birthday when this game happened.
Okay.
Radlinski.
No, sadly not. I never played against Oral. When they were a good team, a high team.
I have no idea.
Tuigamala.
No. So I'll tell you. So one I played with is on the. So he played for Wigan, but only in the Union game. And the two I played against. One played for Wigan in both games, and one played for Bath in the Union game.
Henry Paul, no.
Yeah, Henry Paul.
Henry Paul?
Henry Paul.
When he went to Leeds.
That's cool.
Played, when he played at Leeds. Yeah.
Ah, clever.
Very cool.
Oh, so, was he playing in the same team as Luther Burrell?
I think the timings were different, actually. Because at that time, Luther Burrell was playing for Otley.
Ah, I'm with you. And the other one.
So Henry Paul, on the Bath team, it was Graham Dawe, who played at Plymouth.
Till he was into his 40s.
Into his late 40s, I think.
He was a hard man.
Yeah.
Didn't your brother play for Graham Dawe?
Yeah, he did. And Graham Dawe, his main move, which nearly got Plymouth to the Premiership, they narrowly missed out on promotion behind Bristol. They had a team with Dan Ward-Smith was their number eight, and they're a really, really good team that went on to do some good things. But they basically, Graham Dawe said to my brother and all the forwards except for Dan Ward-Smith, you never, ever pass the ball. If you pass the ball, you're getting replaced straight away. That was the rule. And their signature move was a 14-man maul, which they did all the time. And it was quite a maverick move at that point. No, it wasn't something anyone else had joined in on. And I've never seen a crowd angrier than when I went to watch Nick play for Plymouth against Bristol at the Memorial Ground. And Plymouth did like a smash and grab. Got absolutely mullered the whole game, defended for their lives, and then just scored a couple of 14-man pushover tries and snuck a win. And
so was that 2003, right?
Was it ish around that era? Yeah,
2003.
I went
to uni 2002 to Bristol. I purposely moved to Filton, just down the road actually, at Bishopston, close to the Memorial Ground, so I could watch rugby. And that year they got relegated. The Shoguns got relegated, so it'd be the next year when Plymouth would. It'd be 2003.
It was around that era, yeah. And I've never seen a crowd angrier, like, because I was basically with, you know, my family, and we were all clapping Plymouth when they were doing the lap of honour. And bearing in mind, Bristol rugby fans are brilliant, and rugby fans generally are good natured. We were getting sworn at. We were getting all kinds of abuse because we were clapping Plymouth. They were like, "You're a lot of a disgrace. Piss off back to
Devon."
Disgrace
the game.
Yeah. That's not how you should be ashamed to follow that team.
So that year, that year when your brother played, the year before, they've had Andrew Sheridan, Julian White, Phil Christopher's over there.
I played against that Bristol team in a pre-season game. Andrew Sheridan, Gareth Archer.
Mm.
Jason Little. Gus Peashot.
Was it Jason Little or was it Darryl Gibson who was there?
I played against Jason Little, so maybe that was earlier.
Jason Little then went to Gloucester, I think, and then Gibson replaced him. And there's Peashot and Contepomi as well, who were kind of the big deal.
Kind of.
They're all right.
Kind of.
That's cool, Phil. Henry Paul.
Graham Dawe. The other one. So he was on the bench in the Union game, came on for the last 10 minutes or so, Scotland international Andy Craig, who played for Oral Leeds. I think he went up to Edinburgh for a year or two and then finished his career off at Sedgley, played with him for two or three seasons.
Yeah, we could play this game all day. I would never have got Andy Craig.
Andy Craig, yeah. That's a tough get.
It is pretty tough, mate.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So, the last two things I'll mention is, one, I don't know what they were thinking in the production meeting when they made the... When the Wigan players scored, or when they introduced them, they basically had the mouth breathing for 10 seconds next to their name and number.
Those video clips were amazing. That dance music playing that I played in the background.
Yeah.
And then just instead of a shot, a picture... Yeah, it was them moving, but they didn't say just, they didn't, they never said, like, they obviously said to them, no, don't just smile. You need to make it clear this is a video. So just move your mouth around. Like, I swear we saw Martin Afias come to bed eyes.
And I can't remember the last bit, but oh, yeah, the kits were nice.
Oh, the Wigan kits are classic, isn't it? The yeah. Bath kit was not good.
The second one was the bath.
The bath
union.
Yeah,
quarters.
Come on.
The Wigan shorts were. Sonny Bill Williams would have been proud of those shorts.
Yes, they were like, you know, it's the fashion that you know, young women in recent years wear the shorts so you can just see the bottom of the butt cheek. That's how Wigan wore their shorts.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, agree.
And they look like they had a silky texture to them as well.
Yeah.
Lovely to rub your hands just across the fabric of the shorts.
Right, I think surely we're done.
There's one thing you've missed, and it's on the attire. There was one other thing which people were wearing, which was very odd the time. The scrum hat, yes, for the leather scrum hat. Like, it was almost like a boxing. but there was something else which a bunch of the players were wearing. The nose plasters.
Yeah.
They were a very short-lived fad, weren't they?
They are so ridiculous. I love the idea of the marketing company coming up, like, basically...
Do you know where they're from?
Faking the science to be able to sell them.
No. Do you know where they're from?
Is it a snoring device? To stop snoring.
As I understand it, I'm going to need to be fact-checked here, but I think someone in Liverpool University invented them, and then Robbie Fowler adopted them.
I remember Robbie Fowler wearing them, yeah.
That seems to make sense to me.
Yeah, I remember getting my mum to get me some when I was playing, like, a mini rugby tournament. I got my mum to get me one, because, yeah, these players were wearing them. You know, it can improve your breathing by, you know, a couple of percent.
Yeah,
like, absolute bullshit.
Yeah, there's no way if that study gets peer reviewed, it's going to show anything different.
Hang on, let me just retract my claim. It's all coming back to me now. It was a Northwest Tonight report. Yeah, I think this is close to the truth. Robbie Fowler wore them. Okay, so I'm going to sound crazy now. Robbie Fowler wore them. I'm trying to think if you might have had shares in them or something ridiculous. University of Liverpool did tests on them and came to the conclusion there was no benefit. I think that's the story. That's why it's on Northwest Tonight.
That sounds...
Steve's news show.
That sounds very, very likely.
Yeah, that sounds more likely, doesn't it?
I think that's everything from me. Oh, Andy Robertson's hair.
Yeah.
Andy Robertson, it was a... nicely balding, but he still managed to dye it blonde.
He did. He looked, he looked all right.
There was like the sun in, sort of, he was trying to stealthily dye his hair, but not be spotted dyeing his hair, whereas Sean Edwards was like, look, I'm just going to bleach my hair, all right. Yeah. I'm glad you mentioned Eddie and Steve-O earlier, because that was the kind of takeaway for me. I miss Steve-O. Because Eddie still does bits and bobs, does he?
Eddie's still involved. Steve-O's done. Steve-O's finished.
Yeah, Steve-O's retired, isn't he?
I hope he retired. I hope he retired because he wanted to retire and he wasn't nudged out the door.
No one makes Steve-O do anything that he doesn't want to do. That's the thing about Eddie and Steve-O. Particularly Steve-O. I mean, Steve-O is the hardest commentator ever to live. He can afford anyone. Eddie, not so much. Just the pair of them are so good. I wish more commentating teams would look at what they do. Funny enough, I was talking to... I'm going to name drop now. I was interviewing with Phil, Rob Webber.
Ding.
I don't know how this came up, but it did. And we were talking about Eddie and Steve-O and how enthusiastic they were. And he said something really interesting, which was, yeah, it really annoys me as someone who plays in the front row how much people slate scrummaging. But actually, even if you hate it, if your job is to compensate on the game, You should just be enthusiastic. Just be excited so everyone else can be excited. And that's what Eddie and Steve-O did. Now, I'm not saying they did it artificially. I genuinely do believe that Friday nights for Eddie and Steve-O were the best nights ever. And each Friday was better than the last.
It's Salford City Reds against Widnes on this December Friday night. It's the biggest game in the world right now.
they would preface their questions at halftime and stuff like this. Like, Eddie, we all know that we've already got the greatest game on earth. But do you think we could make improvements?
Yeah.
Something to be said for that. There is.
There is. There.
Yeah, and it's a fair point. The Rob Webber point, I think, probably is a good one.
You might whinge about scrimmaging. Scrimmage is glorious. Get excited about it.
I will try and consider that next time I'm about to have a massive moan about five reset scrums.
Yeah, it's a process, mate. Enjoy the process.
I love a scrum so much. I just hate how long it takes to get one of them finished.
Well, it depends. Yeah. If it takes a minute, I mean, the Exeter Saracens scrum to open up the final was something like 30 seconds of just staticness, just standing there.
Oh, that was glorious.
Waiting for, I think, was it that, or was it a Bath one? It might have been Bath Exeter.
There was an England-Argentina one.
Oh, yes, that was the one.
Yeah, I can't remember when that was.
That was so low and so solid.
Yeah,
and they were waiting for the strike, and that's why everyone was. That's another one which I heard. I'll bore you with this quickly. So yeah, they were waiting for the strike because as soon as the hooker lifted their leg, they knew that the pressure was going to come on. So that's static, and then lift his leg and then hook the ball. But the other one I heard, which is really devious, was the back row. And this is an England one. The back row pretending to pick up or pretending to go from the scrum so the opposition back row would detach and then they'd have a secondary drive. I think, no, it must have been the England scrum half.
You can't dummy from a scrum, can you? A scrum half can't dummy.
But the scrum half could go to the number eight and then look as if he's running away with the ball, for instance, or just do something which makes...
Look as if he's going to get an 8-9, like run from the base as if he's going to get in a pass, 8-9 pass.
Okay.
And then the back row switch off and then England would engage their secondary drive. See, there is more to it than just pushing.
There's not enough trick plays these days. I remember an England game. It would have been around about the time of this Bath-Wigan cross-codes match and maybe slightly earlier, but Richard Hill was the... Not Richard Hill, the flanker. Richard Hill, the scrum half. And they had a five. They had a penalty on England. Had a penalty on the 5 meter line, and took a tap penalty. And it was looking like one of those where, like, just the forwards were all charging to the scrum half at the ball to take a pop pass and try and barge over from 5 yards. And Richard Hill, instead, just did a little, tapped it, picked up as if he was going to pass to a forward, but just dinked it over. Just did a little kick.
Didn't he use his knee? Or was this when he had? Is this when he turned his back to the opposition?
I think it might be when he turned his back to the opposition, then just did a kick over his own head, and the forwards ran through and scored.
Because of course Austin Healey did that. It's a great success.
And did he?
Famously Carlos Spencer did too.
Yeah, someone else in, I want to say, New Zealand Super Rugby did it.
Tony Brown. No, it wasn't.
Maybe Sapuanga did it.
Yeah, Sapuanga. The reason I say Tony Brown is because he's been coached by Tony Brown at the time.
Okay.
Billing Brown was the attack coach. So if you go on YouTube, look at Highlanders attack and Tony Brown, some of the stuff is mind-blowing.
Mm.
Well, that actually brings me to the final point of business, which is any suggestions for homework this week?
Whatever's on. I don't know. You tell me what to watch, I'll watch it.
I have seen a bit of chat about the Lions games.
Second test. I was in South Africa for that, so we could do that.
Oh, the 09. The 09 tour.
Yeah. 09 second test. Yeah. And we did get emailed a link to them on Twitter. So we got
emails. Yeah, they're on
YouTube, but their name's something totally different. They're not...
Yeah, I think Rugby Pass were doing them. I think Rugby Pass were putting them up with maybe alternative commentary or something.
Well, no, I'll find the tweet. I'll send it to you guys and have a think about whether we can tweet it out, but they're definitely on YouTube.
Yeah, they are
under different names.
Okay. As in,
they're named after like films. They're not named Lions Rugby Tests.
Oh, okay, cool. Very good. Very sneaky. Look, my main memory of that, I would love to do that second test particularly, but my main memory of that is how brutal it was. And then Bod does a monster hit on a guy that comes on in the back.
Danny Russo.
And then Danny Russo tries to get up from it and just falls backwards like he's punched drunk.
I tell you what, it's amazing the amount of stuff which was missed. Like the eye gouging on... was that first test though?
That was second test, I think.
Yeah, eye gouging on Luke Fitzgerald.
Scout Berger. But he got a yellow card for it.
Yeah.
Which just
Jesus Christ, which seems
incredible. So you spot eye gouging. He then got something like an 8 or 10 week ban.
And they're all...
And then give a yellow is quite incredible.
Yeah, and they were also wearing Justice for Backies tops.
The week after.
Yeah. No, the week before. Or was it? Oh, I don't know.
Didn't Berger get a 2 week ban and get back for the third test?
Probably. I don't know. Weird things happened. Hey, why don't we save this for the time when we actually review the game?
Yeah. All right. So we're going to try and get you a link. Look on our Twitter feed at Rugby Podcast, and but by whatever means, watch the second test between the Lions and South Africa in 2009, because it was a brilliant match. Brutal. Tasty. It was a really tasty game. Right, he's at Jay Beardmore in the cesspit.
And on Twitter.
On Twitter. Phil might actually tweet if he gets under 20 minutes and has to prove that it actually digitally exists. Otherwise, you know, let the world know that he got under 20 minutes on 5K. One thing we didn't talk about on the main pod, which I'll just briefly mention. We didn't mention the potential matchup between Sonny Bill Williams and Mike Tyson.
I really don't care about it. I mean, I don't care about rugby players not playing rugby. I don't really care about retired boxers. And I don't really care about charity too much. So, if it happens, cool.
We'll talk. I kind of don't disagree. I look at this and go, well, if Sonny Bill Williams wins, he's beaten up a 50... mid-50s man, and that doesn't look good. And if Mike Tyson wins, then, well, he's a former world champion boxer. What did you expect?
Yeah, and also, Sonny Bill Williams is earning an ungodly amount of money from Toronto Wolfpack. Don't put your brain in the way of Mike Tyson's fists, because I'm telling you this much, he's not winning that. He's not.
Yeah.
It's not even going to be close.
One of my favourite comments that I saw on this was, Mike Tyson would drop him faster than Aaron Smith's pants in an airport bathroom.
I like that.
And on that bombshell. Right, have a great week.
Right, see you on Sunday, if not before.
Yeah, nice one. Let the boys play.
Cheers, boys.
Sweet. Take it easy.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, guys.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.